In 2019, the first Strange Realities Conference took place in Nashville, Tennessee. The pandemic and turmoil the following year could not stop 2020's conference from thriving in cyberspace as a live streaming event. Now, for 2021, the third annual Strange Realities Conference will combine these worlds into a paranormal hybrid event, live in person in Nashville and streaming online. Join us in exploring just how truly strange our reality can be with an interdimensional lineup of speakers presenting unique and intellectual perspectives on magic, mysteries, and the paranormal.
Featuring Alan Greenfield, Dr. J. Michael Bennett, a.k.a. Dr. Future, Tim Banal, Soraya Ascaf, Dr. Stephen Finley, Aaron Gullius, Amy Pachula, Brent Rains, Chris Ernst, Heather Mosier, Michael Hughes, Jose Herrera, Joshua Cutchin, Kiki Dombrowski, Nathan Isaac, P.D. Newman, Steven Snyder, a.k.a. Recluse, David Metcalf, Timothy Renner, Steve Stockton, and Bren Collier. Tickets available at StrangeRealitiesConference.com.
It's going to be amazing.
Okay, welcome everybody to part three of our Strange Realities preview. Strange Realities Conference 2021 is coming up in a little more than 2 weeks, and we are very excited, and we are previewing every speaker that we have for the conference is going to be with us over the next few weeks that we are going to be doing this. So expect to see us live on places on Facebook and also on YouTube as well. So I want to introduce everybody. First of all, we have Heather Mosier joining us.
Hi.
Hey, Heather. And Amy Pachula is here as well.
Hello.
And Kiki Dombrowski.
Hi. Good to see you.
Hey, good to see you too. what we're going to do is we are going to talk about what y'all are going to be presenting at the conference. And Kiki was at our conference last year at the virtual conference, and you will actually be in Nashville this year, and you are, as of this moment, getting ready to head out the door to go to Egypt soon. So we, at the other end of that, you will be, after you're done touring the Great Pyramids, you'll be at SIR Nashville.
Yeah. I feel really happy that I'm leaving tomorrow. I had a long month, and I will be in Cairo at about 9-ish Eastern time on Thursday, hopefully, if I get through. Apparently, like, all the like COVID testing stuff is kind of weird now, like traveling, but we've been tested and vaccinated, but it's still a little wonky. But I'll be there for the next 2 weeks. I get back on the 13th of October, and then literally I'm going to hop on another plane, and I'll still be buzzing by the time I get to Strange Realities.
Bring some of that fresh pyramid power back with you.
I will. That's right. I will. Yeah. One of the final things we're doing is a meditation inside the King's Chamber at the Great Pyramid. So I'll come back with all those good vibes.
That'll be awesome.
Thank you.
Not quite as long a flight to Nashville as to Cairo, so I think you'll be okay as far as that is concerned.
Yeah, so thank goodness.
What we're going to do is we're going to talk about the presentations, and I guess we'll start with you, Kiki. What are you going to be talking about at Strange Realities 2021?
Golly, that's such a good question, and I wish I had a really, really clear answer for you, but as we're talking, my presentation has been evolving, which is beautiful. I am going to be doing a presentation on tarot, specifically modern, esoteric-themed tarot. So the Rider-Waite-Smith is my focal point. But I will talk a little bit about Thoth and maybe even the Nabal deck. And I will be talking about the symbol of the gate and how it can be an access point to liminality, both in tarot readings for tarot readers, but also for people who just, you know, need to conjure that liminal energy and that sort of otherworldly vibe in their life. That's what I got for you.
Sounds great.
Cool. No, thank you. I'm so excited to be talking about tarot, because it's like my number one love. So, yeah, it's really interesting. When I started doing the research for this, I was like, I just want to talk about, like, you know, specific cards. And then all of a sudden there's this thing called gate cards. It's a theory by a tarot author called Rachel Pollack. And she believes that there are certain cards that kind of like create an actual gate. And so I talk about those cards in the presentation, but then I kind of go off and share my own opinions on other cards that might be symbolic gates. Not necessarily like just like a garden gate that opens up, but, you know, access points to something mystical.
Cool.
I hope so.
Are you going to be doing any tarot reading at the conference?
I mean, I don't know. Do you want a reading?
I mean, I'm always up for a tarot reading.
I think the conference needs a reading.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I probably have cards near me. I'll bring my cards for sure. I really wasn't planning on it, but I mean, I could teach people tarot 101, divination 101, read tarot, talk about gates and tarot, whatever. And if you guys want readings, like, totally. Do you want me to pull a card for the conference?
Yeah, sure. That'd be awesome.
Let's see what we get. Sorry, I'm leaning down because I'm grabbing my cards. Yay! This is fun. And it's funny too. I haven't opened up my cards for a few days now. Ooh, one just fell out. Those are the jumper cards. Whenever you get those cards that like fly out, you're like, okay, that must be the answer. And we got the Ace of Pentacles. Uh-oh. So that to me is a really positive card. That's a really, you know, healthy, healthy energy. So I think that this event is going to be very successful. And I also think too that it's going to be an opportunistic event for both the presenters and for the two of you. And hopefully this will be a good money card as well. And this is actually one of the gate cards that I talk about in the presentation. And if you look here, I'm going to hold it really close. See, look at, there's a little gate in a garden, and in the background, there's mountains. So
well, one other way to look excellent. At
this. Yeah. And one other way to look at this too, is I would say that the event will be really beneficial for people who come, because what's going to happen is they're going to take all the information they know, and they're going to be led into new worlds and probably led down new rabbit holes by the things that they, by the information they receive from the presenters. So good all around. That's a good card to fly out, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You just like flew out of the deck. Couldn't
plan it better.
I know. That's so good. It's so much better than getting like, oh, the tower.
You're like, oh.
The death card, right?
Well, you know, the death card wouldn't be bad necessarily. It would just be a lot of transition and transformation for people. You know, I don't know if that's what they're coming to Strange Realities for. That sort of shamanic shifting. I don't know.
I think so. That would be good too. But the Ace of Pentacles works very well.
Why not? Yeah, it's good all around. Good. It's a healthy card. It's a card of abundance. It's a card of opportunity. And I love that it is one of the gateway cards. It's somebody leaving the safety of the garden and stepping out towards the mountains of knowledge, maybe even the mountains where the hermit resides. So people are going to get that wisdom they need that weekend. So whoever is watching, get your ticket and come join us and receive the wisdom.
That's right. Yeah. Get your tickets, everybody. Tickets are available online, $30, and in person for $70 if you still want to brave it and come out to Nashville. So we are really pushing those online tickets. So you heard it here. So hopefully this is a self-fulfilling prophecy / tarot reading from Kiki Dombrowski.
May I ask quickly, Heather and Amy, are you going to be there in person?
I will not. It's I own Chattanooga Ghost Tours. It is a super busy weekend for me, so yeah, I'll be there virtually.
Oh, well, I'm glad that you're having a super busy weekend. Chattanooga is the coolest.
We think so.
Yeah, I really like it there. Awesome. Heather, are you going to be there?
No, I'm going to be online as well. Between now, like this moment in that conference, I'm going to be in a couple different states traveling for Small Town Monster stuff. So it was just going to be a lot all at once.
Yeah, so we should talk about that, Heather, and talk about anybody that doesn't know who you are, that tell them what you do for Small Town Monsters, and let's talk about your presentation.
Yeah, so I am a researcher for Small Town Monsters, and I guess for a production coordinator starting tomorrow when we get to Colorado. So, just looking into the history and the folklore of things, finding witnesses for them to interview. I'm the host of On the Trail of Hauntings, which is on YouTube. And I've got a show coming out next year that's going to be called The Lore You Know, where I interview different folklorists and such. But my presentation is going to be going back to, well, I'm also a classics professor, so going back to those roots a little bit and discussing moral panics, and specifically the first, what I would argue is the first one written that we have, like actually in historical text, the first moral panic, which was in 186 BCE. It was the persecution of the Bacchic cult by the Roman government. And then extrapolating the criteria that something must have to be categorized as a moral panic from the Bacchic cult persecution onto the European witch trials of the 14th through the 17th centuries. And then through, like by the end of that, as we're talking about the different categories that have to be met, then I think it kind of opens your eyes to seeing when things are happening in present day society, whether that is a moral panic that's set in motion, and kind of being aware of that, because obviously, I mean, it's a panic, so just kind of calm yourself when those kind of things come out and don't get swept up in it, because it can be bad and it can get deadly if taken too far. So yeah, that's right. What I'm going to talk about.
And we see that again and again through history.
Yeah.
Exactly. So would the satanic panic of like the late early 80s have qualified for that?
Yes. Yes, it absolutely would have. It did. It was a moral panic for sure. So
that overlaps a little with some of what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you were going to be, you said you're the main researcher for the Small Town Monsters. Seth Breedlove's, I guess I call it outfit, but it's a production company, which is really awesome. And I should add too that Heather was featured in one of his latest films. He's beginning to come out with films about as rapidly as Nick Redfern comes out with books. So one of his latest films he came out with was The Bell Witch, the one about the Bell Witch, which featured Pat Fitzhugh, who's actually here in Nashville. Mm-hmm. And that was probably one of the best, I think, documentaries about the Bell Witch. You guys really went through it, and I think you really did some great research on that. We were hoping you would come to Nashville so we could go to the cave. It's not open anymore.
It's not open this year. It shut down last year because of COVID, of course, right. And then they didn't reopen it this year either. So I don't know if they're gonna open it again or open it next year or not. But it's not open.
Well, after the conference, I'm going to take Manal up to Tim Manal. I'm going to take him up to Adams.
So oh, nice.
What are some things that we should check out there?
Well, you should go to the town hall, which is the old Bell School. It's town hall / Motz's restaurant / I think the last time I was there, there was a beautician inside. They have their play there, which that also got canceled this year. For the Bell Witch, but that school, there's a replica cabin with pieces from an original cabin, not the one from like the one from the story, but that's all right behind the school. Bellwood Cemetery has some relatives buried there of the Bell family. If you go to town hall at the old Bell School, which is about the main thing in center of town, find out if Tim Henson is in there. Cause there's a museum inside, and if Tim Henson is there, he'll probably help you out. And, I mean, maybe he might take you around or at least direct you to other places that normally you wouldn't be able to find. So he's super awesome. But yeah, he runs the museum in there.
There's also the marker too. Like there's like a grave marker there, right? But it's not actually where they're buried. I think they're buried a little bit further down. But there's like an obelisk or something that's there.
Yeah, that's it. That's at Bellwood Cemetery. That's just down the road. Where they're actually buried, which the original headstone has been stolen a long time ago, but that's on private property and would require having the right person with you to get there.
Well, Tim Banal can probably talk his way in.
Yeah, if anybody can. okay, yeah. Interesting. I like that topic. I'm very pleasantly surprised. I didn't know what you were gonna talk about, but I think that's awesome. I've actually never heard of the Bacchic. I've heard of the Dionysian cult, but I've never actually heard of that moral panic in ancient Rome. So that's I think that's something that ties into Kiki's tarot reading, that people are going to be enlightened by things I've never heard about. So
I'm excited to share it. It's not something that people talk about too much. But it's covered in Libby. Thousands of people were either murdered or imprisoned during this panic. So,
the Dionysian cult was pretty serious. I mean, is it true? I'm sorry, I'm off on a tangent now. But is it true that they would actually tear people apart when they got so like crazy? Or is that kind of like propaganda?
I mean, That's something that was said. I don't know. For these, they're supposed to be secret cults, so I don't know how much we would have actually like known and it been out there. But yeah, that was something that they said, is that they would work themselves into a frenzy and just be completely ecstatic and rip things apart or people apart. But I'm not sure how much of that was true so much as something that later was used against them when it came to the moral panic.
Part of it, yeah.
Yeah,
you never know, because it's so much of just like, I mean, I can make a analogy to something like the Knights Templar, right? Mm-hmm. And there's so much of that like all those confessions that were made under torture and all that,
right,
that you can't really buy. It's hard to buy into because you don't know how true any of that stuff really is.
Mm-hmm. When you get in the arena of mass hysteria, then things can just get way out of hand and crazy.
Yeah,
for absolutely. Sure. Which I think that'll lead us a little bit, because Amy, we had you on the show back in January. I think you were the second guest we had on this year. And we talked about the Corpsewood murders. And I think you said that's going to be part of your presentation.
It is. I own Chattanooga Ghost Tours, and then I wrote the Corpsewood Manor Murders in North Georgia, as well as Haunted Chattanooga and the Ghostly Tales of Chattanooga. So I'm going to be talking about all those things. Corpsewood is probably the one I get asked to talk about the most. So, you know, that may take up, you know, a little more of the time, because it's, you know, it's a fascinating case. You know, I tell people it's the most bizarre true crime you'll ever hear. Anything weird you can think of, from the Church of Satan to a hand-built castle in the middle of the National Forest to LSD to strange creatures, all in there, all true. So yes, I do expect to be talking about that. So actually, in my book, I have a whole chapter about the Satanic Panic. So that's why I was asking you about that, Heather.
Yeah.
Because that, you know, around here, one of the victims was a member of the Church of Satan, and so the case immediately got dubbed the devil worshiper case in rural North Georgia where it happened. Of course, those are two entirely different things. But you know, once people get something in their head, and then, you know, as I said, especially back in the early 80s when this happened, when you had the whole Satanic Panic and everybody coming up with all kinds of wild accusations or whatever, things just tend to really get out of hand. So I can talk about that a little bit, but it really has a lot of strange, bizarre elements in it. I've got, let me find this right quick, a photo. Can I do a screen share real quick?
Yeah, if you'd like to, that's fine.
So one of the things that the case is famous for. One of the bizarre things that happened was that one of the victims, Dr. Scudder, had done a painting, 2 years before his death. It was a self-portrait. I'm trying to do this sharing screen, and I'm not sure if it's, oh, here, let me do this. All right, let me put it on the right screen. There you go. 2 years before his death. Is it showing up on the screen now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it should be. Yep. There we go.
All right. Well, anyway, you can see he's gagged with 5 bullet holes in his head. Well, that's how his body was found. And the murderers never saw or heard anything about the case. It's just one of like dozens of really bizarre things about this case. So, you know, I practiced law for 20 years. This is my retirement job. It's much more fun. But here we go. I first heard about the case when I was practicing law. It actually made international news back then. And then when I started the ghost tour, I started hearing about it from an entirely different angle. So it's a fun one to talk about either way.
Cool.
Yeah, it is. And I learned a lot from your book. I met you completely by just like serendipitous chance too. It was funny. So that was, it's an incredibly interesting story, and, you've got some interesting theories about it too, which, with that goes into Howard Finster and all that as well. So,
right. Yeah, I tried to write about those in the book, but the publisher made me take all that out.
Yeah. And it was probably something, and you talked about it on the episode, that we did with you, and mm-hmm. you can go back and listen to that, because it's really interesting, and it's a really interesting theory. What are you going to be? That's going to be part of the presentation. What else are you going to be presenting about?
I'm going to be talking about the ghost of Chattanooga, of course.
Perfect.
And I'm going to be talking a little bit about ghost photography. For whatever reason, and I don't claim to know why, we get a lot of people get a lot of ghost pictures on our tour, and I'm not just talking about orbs. I'm talking about faces and figures and things like that. So I'm going to share some of those and also talk about a few of the things people think are paranormal pictures that really aren't, because we don't want to tell people, you know, yes, everything that you think is a ghost picture really is, because, you know, we lose credibility that way. We want to make sure people have some idea, because I probably get people send me at least 10 ghost pictures a week, and the vast majority of them I look at and I just don't see anything. But I want to do a little bit of explaining about that as well. And you and I, when we talked earlier today, had talked, mm-hmm. I don't know that I'm going to be talking about this during the conference, but I did bring something specifically for Heather. I put in my pictures today. You want me to go ahead and show that, Adam?
Sure.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. All right. Let me go through this again.
Is this what we talked about earlier?
Yeah, oh, the sugar flat road creature.
There it is. Yeah.
We our shop has always been sort of a curiosity shop, and when we had first opened the shop back in 2013, we actually had the sugar flat road creature head in the shop for some months there. And Heather, I know that you were sort of on the lookout for it for a while. And for those of you who've never heard of it, it's actually a famous Bigfoot head. The legend is that it was run over by a fellow who was out on a date in the late 80s, and he decided to cut its head off with a shovel and put it on his mantle, which until his wife had something to say about that. And that, too, could have something to do with the fact he was on a date, not with her. But after that, he gave it to the fellow who owned Cuz's Antiques. They kept it in the shop there from, you know, like I said, late 80s until they went out of business in 2013. We leased it for a little while then. I know after we gave it back for a while, it was on display at a state park there in Lebanon, Tennessee. But the really cool thing was, when I'd first gotten it, it was around the same time that one of the Bigfoot groups was super excited because they had gotten some hair samples and they didn't say where the hair samples came from, but supposedly Bigfoot hair samples that they were excited about the results and they were just about to share them. I don't know if it was from this one, but this one shed a lot of hair, so that may have had something to do with it. It was a really cool thing to have in the shop for a while, and before it left, I did have a couple of holograms made of it. So we still have those in display in the shop, even though we don't have the head in there anymore.
Oh, cool. Okay.
But yeah, it was definitely you know, how many people can say that you have a Bigfoot head in your business?
So was it in the, because it used to be, we were talking about this earlier, but it used to be in Lebanon, just down the road from here, mm-hmm. for like in an antique shop.
Was that
before?
They had it from Cousins had it from the late 80s until they went out of business in 2013. Mm-hmm. And I had actually driven up just to see the head. And there's this big sign on the door that says closed, but the head was in the window and they were trying to sell their stock and stuff. So they had a sign in the window that had their phone number on it. So I just called them up and said, hey, you know, I'm interested in your Bigfoot head. I know that's not really the kind of stock you were talking about selling, but so we made some arrangements for me to lease it with an option to buy for a while.
Lease with option to buy. Okay.
Well, we didn't have as much interest in it as I thought that we would. Like I said, I drove an hour and a half to see the thing. So I couldn't really afford to buy it, you know, without getting the return on it that way. But yeah. Yeah, if someone's interested in buying it, I can probably put you in touch with
maybe Tim Banal.
I know. I bet Tim will want to grab that creepy head.
Just to ask, has anybody ever done any like research on it or tried to like take the hair samples or
X-rays,
scientific stuff with it? Or has it just always been this kind of odd curio?
Well, like I said, I know that you know the Bigfoot scientific community had, some of them were excited because they just had some hair samples that had been analyzed, and I don't think they would have been so excited if they'd come back negative. Mm-hmm. But you know, beyond that, no, I don't know. It's fairly delicate. The skin sort of feels like, I don't know, sort of velvety right now, and it does shed, and I think that they're probably are fairly concerned about just preserving it. So to my knowledge, there's not been any testing of it. But that's a good question to ask.
Well, have you thought about buying it?
Well, like I said, I did before, but it was too expensive for the very little interest that we had in it for me to be able to afford it. So.
Do you feel like going back now though? Are you like, maybe I'll give it a second thought?
No, it was pretty expensive. But it was cool to, you know, like I said, it was really cool to have it while we did.
Yeah, that's so awesome.
Heather, I got to ask you, since you're part of Small Town Monsters, yeah. What's your thoughts? Do you think that's a real Bigfoot head? An albino Bigfoot?
An albino Bigfoot? Right. I don't know. I mean, it looks cool. I don't know. I would want it in my shop too, as far as that goes.
I don't know if you saw the little sign that was next to it. It was written by the guy who ran it over. It says, "Is this an alien?" You know, why in the world someone would think it was an alien rather than a Bigfoot kind of baffles me. But, you know, the Yetis are supposedly white. So I figure, well, maybe, you know, maybe they can have some in North America that are white as well.
Yeah, maybe he's coming down for the winter.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Migrating.
Like, it looks more like a Yeti than a Bigfoot. Yeah.
He was on his way to Florida.
He's a snowbird.
So you're basically going to talk about what you do with the Chattanooga Ghost Tours and the spirit photography. And mm-hmm. Amy has some really cool pictures. She showed me some stuff earlier today.
I've got some right here if you want me to put those up for a little teaser for your audience, or if you'd rather
one is fine. I mean, that's totally fine.
Thanks for sharing these.
Yeah. All right, let me see.
I want to say too that I got to do the tour back in June, at the end of June. I remember when it was now. And it's a really great tour. You put a, you guys really, you just take a little circle around Chattanooga. I think I did the Murder and Mayhem tour.
Murder and Mayhem tour. Yes, yeah. I think you did.
That's the one I did. So you've got like a couple of different tours, different types that you do.
Mm-hmm. Now, this photo is from our ghost hunt. Besides our tour, right now because of COVID, I have less guides. So we're only running our best tour and our best ghost hunt. The hunts are more like the investigations that you see on TV with all the equipment. And it, the one we're running goes through UTC's campus and down to Citizen Cemetery. For decades before we ever started the tour, the rumor was that Danforth Chapel inside Patton Chapel was haunted by a suicide bride ghost who'd gotten stood up at the altar. And we've gotten photos of her before, but I think this is the best ghost photo I've ever seen. I think this is amazing. I think she actually looks kind of like the bride from All That Jazz, you know, with the big headdress thing on. And what really convinced me about this, you know, because sometimes we get people that are sending us photos where they've stuck in Slimer, or there's one iPhone app that, you know, puts fake ghosts into your photos. But the thing is, everybody in the world who used that iPhone app to try to send us some fake photos always used this girl in a little calico dress. And I would always ask them, oh, did you take this photo or did a friend take it? And they'd say, oh, yeah, I took it. And I'd say, well, you know, this is actually looks exactly like the little girl in this iPhone app. And then they changed their story. It's like, oh, yeah, my friend took it and sent it to me. But this girl, I looked on her Facebook page on some public posts that she had on her Facebook page. You know, she didn't know I was looking at it. And she was like not trying to say this is a ghost at all. She was like, you know, when she contacted us, she said, you know, I'm sure this isn't anything, but I just thought it was cool looking. And on her her Facebook page, she was saying, you know, it's just hard for me to believe that you know, I got anything. So I'm going to go back there and I'm going to try to take some more pictures just to try to disprove it. And that's not the kind of attitude of someone who's who's faking. So we were super excited about this photo.
There's actually a lot, as I'm sure you're aware, there's actually a lot of stories about UTC.
Mm-hmm.
I remember some theater students telling me about someone being in the Fine Arts Building,
mm-hmm.
which you would know what I'm talking about. And they were practicing, like they were practicing for something, and they saw somebody like sitting in it was completely empty, and they saw mm-hmm. somebody sitting in there.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently they like asked them who they were. They didn't get a response and they went and turned the lights on and there was nobody there. So mm-hmm. that's like, that was one creepy story that I heard. And I actually used to work at the bookstore there when I was in college. And one time I was just like, I would sit it for a couple hours at night. You'd sit there for people to come, for the students to come and buy like different stuff. The rest of the bookstore was closed off. And one night I'm just sitting there, nothing's really going on. And I see something just like go right past in my peripheral vision. And like, I could have sworn I like even went back to the back of the bookstore and was like looking around, see if anybody was there. That was kind of freaky.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of weird stuff going on. Well, I think like any college campus is like that, though.
The ghost that I just showed you the picture of, her name is Anna. And we know that because on our hunts, we use an ovilus and she tells us that all the time. But mm-hmm. she's actually kind of a hoot. She's one of my favorite ghosts. As you might expect from a ghost who got stood up at the altar, she will only talk to women. She has more than once, when we've had a bachelorette party along on the tour, tried to talk them out of getting married. She asked for coffee a lot. Really? She asked for coffee a lot, and there's a smell of coffee around a lot of times when she's present. Anna's one of my babes.
Well, this has been excellent. I really appreciate the three of you doing this. Let me, for real quick, because I have it here when everybody is going to be speaking. Kiki, you are on Saturday and for everybody that's out there, this is Central Time. United States, because we do have some international people watching this. 2 to 3 o'clock is when Kiki is going to be speaking. And Heather, actually, you open us up on Saturday the 16th from 9:15 to 10:15 in the morning. And that's good because that's like actually an hour later for you. So
yeah,
if you're on Eastern time. And so you open us up with that. And then Amy, you are 12:30 to 1:30 Central time on Sunday the 17th.
Right.
So that's when you guys can tune in and you can hear and see their wonderful presentations. But if you miss it, the good thing about us streaming live and doing this on the private Facebook Facebook group is you can go back and watch these presentations anytime. So we will start with you, Kiki. Tell everybody where they can find your books. You actually have new editions of the book of one of your books out that you sent to me, and where they people can find you.
I hope you liked it.
Very nice. Thank you for sending it to me.
Welcome. A Curious Future is a book on divination, and you could get it at any large retailer. So you could go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble or whatever and find a copy. And I encourage you to check it out if you're curious about divination and just want to learn about different types of divination. If you just want like a general way to reach out to me, just kikidombrowski.com. But I'm not very active on social media recently. Maybe I will be when I'm in Egypt. So if you want to see like pictures of my vacation for the next couple of weeks, you can find me on Twitter, KikiD333.
Perfect. And Amy?
Anyone interested in the ghost tour can go to ChattanoogaGhostTours.com. And we have several pages on there that give you information about that. Our Ghostly Encounters button is our blog page, and it tells about some of the things that have happened on the tour and on the ghost hunt before. There's one story on there that I don't repeat because every time I do something bad happens, but it talks about what I put in the shop 2.5 days before the half the building fell down. As far as my books, I have, like I said, Corpsewood Manor Murders in North Georgia, Haunted Chattanooga, and then a children's version of that, the Ghostly Tales of Chattanooga. And as Kiki said, you can find them on, you know, any online retailer. You can get them on Google Play, iTunes, local bookshops around here. I was really excited when I moved about a year ago and I went to the local grocery store and they had my book sitting there. So, And of course we sell it at the ghost tour as well for 20% off. So, that's where you can find all of that.
Yeah, I can attest to that. Cause I did see them, several different places, and my dad just had a copy. He didn't even tell me he had one. And Heather, where can people find you?
Oh man. I don't have a book yet, but my goal is to be like Amy there. And when I walk into a store someday, see one of my books, that would be so cool. I have a piece actually in the Feminine Macabre Volume 1, which just came out earlier this year. And that, that article is about cursed objects, particularly, and letters that accompany them, particularly from the Bellwitch Cave. So I've written stuff on that and been in some journals, but no books yet. But if you want to find me just personally on Instagram, you can find me at Pagan Historian. I'm on Facebook, just my regular name. But go to smalltownmonsters.com or go to YouTube and look at Small Town Monsters. You'll find me on Paranormal Unexplained, on the Trail of Hauntings, behind the scenes stuff, and you said the Bell Witch, I'm in that, and on the Trail of UFOs Dark Sky, I'm in a couple of them, Mothman Legacy. So Small Town Monsters, follow them and you'll find me.
Are you still doing your podcast?
Lady Anne has been doing most of the work on that lately. Because a lot of stuff picked up for Small Town Monsters. So I haven't been involved with that as much, but yes, the Caravan of Lore, the Caravan Library of Lore as well, with Lady Anne, and I am a co-host on there. So yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And Amy and Heather and Kiki will be speaking, in case you're just now tuning in, at our Strange Realities Conference in Nashville, Tennessee, and online October 15th through the 17th. We are happy to have them to be a part of it. Remember, tickets are still available for in-person. That is $70. But we are really pushing the $30 online ticket where you can just sit at home and watch at your leisure. So thank you so much. And we will be back about an hour and 15 minutes. We'll have Michael Hughes, Brent Rains, and Christopher Ernst joining us. All right. Thank you so much, ladies.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Right. So good to see you all. Bye. Good to see you as well.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Hello, everyone, and we are continuing on Conspiranormal, our Strange Realities 2021 conference preview shows. And we have yet another set of three speakers. We had Kiki Dombrowski, Heather Mosier, and Amy Petula on earlier in the evening. And now we have Michael Hughes and Chris Ernst and Brent Rains. And Brent, it's not too far away from us where we are here in Nashville. And all three of these gentlemen will actually be in Nashville. So we want to thank you guys for doing this tonight and coming to speak at Strange Realities Conference. Yes, so indeed. Welcome. Thanks. Welcome back, guys.
Right on. Looking forward to it.
Thank you.
Absolutely. So the purpose of this tonight is to kind of give a teaser about what you guys are going to be talking about. And we can kind of just talk a little bit about, you know, a little bit about that or whatever kind of the other kind of subjects, just more like a stream of consciousness type of thing. So, and then we'll also tell everybody what time you guys are going to be speaking. And we will, I guess, start with you, Mr. Hughes. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be back, and I am so looking forward to Nashville, especially being in the Dolly Parton room. That's pretty exciting. I hear the pillows are very fluffy in the Dolly Parton room. So yes. looking forward to seeing everybody, you know, as part of, like, I feel like I've been exiled, as many of us have, from this community for like a long time. And I'm really missing conferences. I'm really missing hanging out at the bar with people. You know, just cause that's where like the really interesting conversations take place. So, I am really psyched.
Well, SIR Nashville is even better because it's BYOB. So there's like a fridge beautiful. In the
All
room.
Right. All so. Right. Well, the rooms, you know, room/bar, you know, it's kind of the same thing.
The hallway.
The hallway. Yeah.
For you guys that are staying in the motel that we have, you're gonna be right down the street from the Fiddler's Inn, which is world famous and apparently world famous in the conspiracy world as well, as I understand it.
To site of MK Ultra mind control programming.
Yes.
Oh man. Well, we can bring our fun there. We can bring some of our own mind programming.
Are you, Brent? Are you familiar with the Fiddler's Inn?
I am not. Mythology? I am not. Man, that's a that you're going to blow my mind with something, I can tell.
All right, guys. So what we're going to do, we're going to talk about your presentations. And I guess we'll start with you, Mike. What are you going to be presenting about?
Yeah, well, I'm kind of rolling it all together now, so I don't have an official name for it, but something that's really interested me for many years now, and I know it's touched a lot of our lives in many different ways, is conspiracy, like taking a look at the larger Fortean paranormal anomalous world and how conspiracy culture became a part of that over the years. Like, what made that link? Why is conspiracy culture kind of considered such a, you know, kind of a vital part of this field? And where, you know, if that makes sense, like, particularly with some of the, you know, some of the extremism and and things that we've seen in the past, you know, I'd say 5, 10 years even, you know, is conspiracy culture, is conspiracy lore, is that really part of the larger stuff that we study? And maybe if it is, like, how do we kind of disengage from the kind of harmful elements? So, you know, even though, like, I'm the guy associated with hexing Donald Trump, I want to make it clear, like, I'm not coming into this with, like, a political agenda. I don't even want to view conspiracies, particularly through a political lens, but just more like, you know, why has that sort of thinking become so deeply enmeshed in our community? When does it become harmful? Like, how can we maybe, as a community, sort of monitor ourselves a little bit better and keep an eye on the harmful beliefs, the harmful ideologies that could turn into, you know, harmful actions and hurt people and hurt our society. So it's a lot, you know, but I'm going to talk about, like, UFOs, and because I think ufology was, like, really a prime vector mm-hmm. for bringing conspiracies into the larger paranormal Fortean sort of realm. So I'm going to look kind of closely at that, but also there's an experiment I've been doing where I'm using YouTube, because I think YouTube is, like, a real major vector for conspiracy thinking. It really pulls a lot of people into that sort of web. So over the past several months, I created, like, a brand new fresh account, and I'm just watching UFO related videos on YouTube with that account and seeing, like, where that goes. Like, where does the algorithm take you? Wow. When you start watching, oh man, I'm interested in aliens, and you wind up like, hey, let's go blow up some buildings full of Jews, you know, like, so I'm really kind of trying to in real time kind of get an idea of how that kind of radicalization works.
Wow.
Yeah, this is a big thing. Surfiel and I both just recently, I don't know, did you finish the Sherry Schreiner documentary, The Viceland? I mean, I don't know how many of you guys have seen that, but that's well worth watching and pretty depressing. But, you know, it talks about how, at the end, about how the algorithms on YouTube, of course, we're streaming right now on YouTube, ironically enough, that, you know, I wonder if the algorithms are going to spit this one out, but how the algorithms just continue to just give you what you want to see.
But more than that, the reinforcement, the more extreme stuff is, the more engagement it has. So it naturally raises in the priority that the algorithm gives you.
Yeah. Cause all it's seeing is just the engagement. It's not looking at, like, the content or what even the content is even saying. It's just saying, there are eyeballs on the screen and that's what we want.
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, social media has it's done some great things for sure, but just the darker aspects of this kind of leading us by the nose with the algorithm and the propensity to, like, pit people against each other. And, you know, so I'm definitely going to talk about all that stuff too, because it's all part of the bigger picture, you know, why conspiracy culture, which used to be really marginalized, now, like, you know, people's grandmothers are QAnon and stuff like that. So it's a cultural force, and that's been largely enabled by social media. So I'll definitely be talking about, like, some of the science behind that, some of the research and all that kind of stuff too.
You know, I think we probably talked about this when we had you on last, Mike, but we had Eric Davis on towards the end of last year. And I mean, that was a very eye-opening interview. And, you know, he kind of talked about how, because of the pandemic, everybody's at home and everybody's got their eyes on the computer. So people have, like, entered into their own kind of chapel perilous state and also become radicalized as well. So it's like, that's why, you know, I think 20 years ago, your grandma would have laughed at any of this kind of stuff. But now grandma has become radicalized. And it's just, it's a funny state, especially for those of us that have been like studying a lot of this stuff for so long, that there's been such a, like, there's been a seesaw thing going on. It's been, everything is like, the world is upside down. It's completely topsy turvy. Because now people that would never have believed this even 5 years ago, or any stuff of this kind of stuff 5 years ago, now are eating it for breakfast every morning.
Right. I mean, it used to be, you know, you'd see, you know, Bill Cooper, you know, books and stuff like that, and it was just marginalized. Now, like you said, you know, hearing it out of grandma about the reptilians and the New World Order and the Great Reset, and, you know, and all this stuff, and it's just like, it's mind-boggling to see and that's part of what I found appealing about it when I was when I was younger and I was really into this stuff, is it was a weird little niche. You know, you could kind of simultaneously explore it but not really buy into it. You could find entertainment in it,
right?
Because it was just a weird little subculture. But when it became, you know, like 30-40% of the population, you know, that has like real ramifications. It's not just this kooky little hobby, you know, that people laugh at, the tinfoil hat jokes and all that. I mean, that everybody's got the tinfoil hats now, and it's kind of terrifying.
It's become mainstream, and yeah, you're right. It's pushed beyond that to just like total, like you said. I mean, total radicalization.
Yeah. So that's what I'm going to talk about. Again, through, you know, not through a political lens at all, but through just an kind of the idea of like mind viruses. I'm reading a really interesting book now where there's a philosopher's kind of glommed onto that idea, you know, kind of Richard Dawkins talking about memes and things like that was where a lot of people think it originated. But really, Colin Wilson, the great Fortean occult chronicler. Now, he wrote a book called The Mind Parasites, and that's where I first encountered the term, like, many years ago. So it's kind of cool seeing that idea becoming, you know, part of actual, like, academic discourse and things like that. So it should, you know, I hope it's fun. I hope it's kind of provocative. It'll probably ruffle some feathers, but, you know, that's what we're here for, you know, to explore the ideas. Like, we want to explore the fringe, but in also exploring the fringe, we kind of have to look at ourselves and what our role is in the larger culture by being part of that fringe and propagating the ideas of that fringe. So my hope is it's really fun and you know, hopefully eye-opening in some ways, and maybe cause a lot of us to think about our community and like what is part of our community and the stuff that we either embrace or the stuff maybe that we don't want to touch that anymore.
Right.
Much needed.
I think also we talked to Heather Mosier earlier this evening, and her presentation is actually going to be about moral panics. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's
going
to be.
She's going way back into Roman times.
Yeah.
And
wow.
Early Christian, and then So
that's great. Sounds like a lot of tie-in. Yeah. Sounds like a lot of this stuff is dovetailing. So another reason I'm really excited to be there. I mean, I'm really stoked for the lineup, and you know, so many interesting subjects, so much great stuff, great people. So. I'm in, man. I'm excited. I wish it was tomorrow.
Awesome.
And not today.
Right. Well, if it was tomorrow, we'd be freaking out right now.
But, yeah, you got time.
Okay. So let's go over to you, Brent. I want to know what you're going to be presenting about at our Strange Realities Conference 2021.
Well, I'm going to I thought I'd start by kind of telling how I got into the field. Back as a 14-year-old, which has been a while, 54 years and 8 months, you know. It'll be 9 months next month. But, you know, it's been quite a journey. And And of course, part of the Keel book I wrote, John Keel, who had a huge influence on the direction I took, you know, departing from just the extraterrestrial theory that was popular when I got into it, still is pretty popular, but, you know, I got interested in the contactee experiences, the psychic phenomena, and all of that, began to explore it firsthand, and even saved up my money and spent the road, you know, on the time on the road back in 75, 76, and 77, just traveling from Maine to Florida and kind of zigzagging my way down the coast into Indiana and Ohio and places. And here I am still in Tennessee now. Met a young lady who's giving me information on sightings in the area and ended up getting married. I'm originally from Maine. I'm a true maniac, see. But yeah, it's been an interesting journey. I mean, it's opened a lot of doors, you know, in my life. It's expanded my perception of a lot of things. I got very interested in a lot of what Keel was saying and writing, and so I felt compelled to write the book that I did, you know, exploring all these different threads and seeing where they might lead me. And you know, he mentioned about, I asked him back in 71, I think I was 19 at the time, you know, I wanted to do this. I wanted to do what you're doing, you know, get out there and interview people and try to understand it better. And he recommended I study a book on apparitions, which I went out and bought. I'm a parapsychologist named Terrell. And I also studied Marian apparitions and things, which he and Jacques Vallée were also studying and looking at the comparative elements, you know. And one of the I became really good friends for about 37 years until his passing with a psychiatrist that was a good friend of John Keel, Dr. Berthold Schwartz, and he, you know, wrote a book called UFO Dynamics. And so anyway, I met him a couple times, and we shared extensive correspondence. When I was traveling around the countryside interviewing people, he was on the other end telling me, well, go see Earl Neff up in, you know, near Cleveland, Ohio. Go here, go there. I ended up staying with a family down near Cincinnati that he had visited, you know, that was having UFO sightings. And the housewife was even reporting a silver-suited humanoid figure materializing in the home. Unfortunately, I never encountered him, but it was they allowed me to use their home as kind of like a way station. And Dr. Schwartz, a psychiatrist who was, you know, very interested in all of these things, had been studying initially things in the field of parapsychology, and he became acquainted with John Keel, who said, well, we need you in this field, you know, to study UFO phenomena, because there's a lot of psychic elements being reported there. So he did. So anyway, from there, I mean, I got interested in the fact that Dr. Schwartz felt, and other people like Brad Steiger, and of course, John Keel, mm-hmm. felt that a lot of our contactee experiences were telling real stories, and that what they were experiencing was psychic a lot of times and mediumistic. And so anyway, that's been my journey to try to, and I showed you one of these whistles here from, you know, Peru. They're made by the Chimu culture. These were pre-Columbian. This, however, is a functional replica, but I mean, I became interested in what shamans did, you know, and their experiences with strange beings from other realms and such. And so I felt like I'd also, at the my talk, I would also blow the whistles at the beginning, and we can get us in the right shamanic frame of mind, perhaps, to explore these things a little deeper. But I'm all over the place, so yeah, what can I say?
Sounds great.
Yeah, you should definitely do that.
All right.
A way to inaugurate the last year Joshua Cutchin played a didgeridoo. I called it a weebering last year.
Yeah, you said it right.
And so you might as well play that.
Okay, well, what we might do is give someone selected from the audience, a lucky person, to have a sound bath, you know, get them right in between some whistles, and that's the most powerful.
Nice.
Cool.
Really kind of send them into the alternate dimension, you know.
Absolutely. Well, we're happy to have you back for the second year in a row.
I'm looking forward to it.
This is the second year that Britt is going to be with us. The first year, I'd actually had already had the lineup set and didn't know about Brent, and he reached out to me, but he came and we actually recorded an episode with him right before we did that first conference, and then put it out right after. And you came and you sold some books. I hope you sold some.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I think it was about 5 or 6. I did good.
you were up there with the question and answer session at the end of the night as well. So we did get you up on stage, and we are happy to have you.
I was very impressed with that first conference, and you know, getting to see all the different views that you don't see at other conferences, you know, where it's so much is explored and not just, you know, and also the fact that we could be on so many different, looking at so many different things and trying to connect what we could together, but also that nobody got into any fist fights or anything. Very polite and cordial. You know, some of these UFO conferences, they get a little violent sometimes.
That makes me think, Brent, that you actually have a story where you witnessed something like that at a UFO conference or some kind of paranormal conference.
Well, I know that people could get rather emotional. I remember John Keel saying that in 1948, he was at a meeting in New York City. It was a small room with about 40 people, and he remembers that they were all arguing as to whether the government was censoring this flying saucer stuff or not, you know? And he says very little has changed.
Yeah.
Wow. Yep. I think Tim Banal's ready to start some fights.
Yeah. Maybe there'll be some fights in his presentation, which I think is...
Well, maybe he'll keep it over in the bars.
Right. Tim's fights are emotional fights.
Yeah, I hadn't seen that yet.
Well, it will be an experience, I'm sure. We all know that. Well, we are definitely happy to have you, Brent, and be a part of this. You are going to be speaking on Sunday. I'm going to pull it up here at 1:40 to 2:40 Central Time. And that is mostly saying Central Time for the benefit of our people that are going to be watching this online.
Yeah.
Everyone else that is there, obviously, will see it at that time. So,
and if you're international, just Google Central Time United States, because we don't know.
Yeah, we're actually going to have. I think someone is actually going to be listening. Is actually going to be watching in Australia.
Awesome.
So yeah. So just to reiterate that, since we are streaming this on a private Facebook group, these presentations are actually going to be saved, and you can actually go back and watch them if you miss something. So,
yeah,
Mr. Ernst, let's talk about your presentation. We actually got a bit of a sneak preview of this a few months ago.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's going to be similar. So a few months ago, I came on and I talked with Surfiel talked a little bit about his background in LDS. Is that correct? Did I say
no?
It's not LDS. RLDS. I always mix it up. No, it's Mormons. Just Mormon, right?
Yeah. RLDS. It's like Mormon Light.
Mormon Light. Okay. All right. And I talked about. Sorry. See, I'm completely misconstruing the background that you came from. But you talked about your background in a strange religious upbringing. Let's say strange spiritual upbringing. And I talked a little bit about mine. My parents were followers of the 60s guru, where at least most people know him as a 60s guru, Meher Baba. The interesting thing about him that I came to know later as an adult, sort of going back and looking at a lot of the literature and really, a voluminous amount of recordings of his life, a lot done by Westerners, a lot of Europeans, and the early part of his life. You know, it wasn't just sort of like Osho, Maharishi type guru. It was very strange stuff that he was involved with, particularly prior to World War II and including World War II. And the only other person I think that has sort of talked about this from an occult standpoint is Paul Weston. People are familiar with Paul Weston, sort of the sage and historian of Glastonbury, as it were. And so what I'm specifically going to talk about is the idea of the sort of the trope of secret chiefs and how within the sort of teachings of Meher Baba, which are like the best way to describe it is they're the most recent teachings of a lineage that that goes back quite a bit further and is this really interesting blend of Sufism and Hinduism and sort of general mysticism. And so, you know, for anybody that's not familiar with what I mean by secret chiefs, this is, you know, you can go back probably further than Blavatsky, but let's go back to Theosophy and Helena Blavatsky and, you know, these supposed Tibetan masters or Mahatmas that she was speaking with, which many people say were simply her. From then on, you know, as Theosophy sort of grew, Leadbitter and Bailey called them the masters of ancient wisdom. And then you have Guy Ballard and Elizabeth Clare Prophet called them ascended masters. Crowley even, you know, was essentially, you know, having experiences with similar sort of ascended masters. Dion Fortune called them the esoteric order. Gurdjieff mentioned that some of his teachings came from, you know, the universal brotherhood, which some people believe were the Sarmong, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, brotherhood. And then even the nine, the nine, the capital nine. All of these, you know, are kind of similar tropes and mythologies of the secret chiefs or ascended masters. And most people are familiar with the ones that I've mentioned, but there actually is one that comes from the Meher Baba lineage too. And it involves certain other masters that are actually quite well known in India, such as Sai Baba of Shirdi, who people should not confuse with the more recent Afro'd Sathya Sai Baba, who is a pederast of some sort. These other people that there's, you know, these sort of separate historical lineages of saints within India and the Middle East. And so it's a very specific, hierarchy. And there's all these accounts from these different Westerners prior to World War II and even after of, you know, going on these journeys with Meher Baba and, basically, you know, meeting these weird people who were said to be agents and part of this larger spiritual hierarchy that is essentially another secret chief's, you know, mythos. So I'm going to present all that information because it's pretty voluminous and it goes into a lot of detail about, like, you know, who people are, numbers of things and stuff like that. And I find it quite interesting because if you compare it to really the same kind of current of the secret chiefs that have been, I guess you could say, recycled or arguably recycled since Theosophy. It's similar to that. And, I have not done the research, or at least in the research that I've done, I haven't found any sort of, you know, connection from the 1800s. But, there, you know, very well could have been. This could be the source for that, or this could be something which is completely separate that, are coming up from different cultures and stuff like that. But regardless, it's a really interesting, esoteric hierarchy. Definitely, I think for anybody that's interested in, you know, Theosophy or this idea of secret chiefs or ascended masters, it should be pretty interesting.
Wow. Fascinating, and I think that's going to be really great considering we also have Alan Greenfield capping the night off. That's
yeah,
that you're going to be yeah. speaking.
Yeah, well, it's actually funny. When I was listening to the interview that you did with Professor Finley, I was thinking about how similar it is in many ways. Mm-hmm. Like he's sort of kind of breaking apart, you know, the Nation of Islam and talking about, you know, this sort of these not hidden, you know, influences that are behind there. And I think it's interesting. You know, I wonder how many of these like 20th century spiritual figures you can kind of, you know, find much stranger backgrounds for than, you know, previously understood. But yeah, Greenfield, of course, too. I mean, that's the other, you know, he's the master of the ascended masters.
Well, Chris,
no, that's that doesn't work.
Is that what you're saying is that you have this Eastern tradition, but this ascended master tradition is kind of the Western esotericism
right
interpretation of that.
Yeah, but you know, unlike Gurdjieff or the Theosophy, you know, any of the people from Theosophy who are, you know, many people have said it's, well, and I think that the arguments are pretty valid for there being some, you know, tomfoolery in there and some trickery, as always seems to happen with anything. I mean, George P. Hansen, Trickster in the Paranormal, you know, so there's that, but there's also, and this is freely out there for people to find themselves. It's just that I know about it because I was involved in it when I was a kid, and you know, my family's kind of part of the American, like from the 60s wave of people. They're part of like the inner circle, so on, you know, so to speak. Like, you know, I've met a lot of the, I've been to India a couple times and met a lot of the people and interviewed them and talked to them and stuff like that. People that are still around, is that, you know, there's this documentation of essentially like being with some of these ascended masters and these odd machinations that they're doing. So, you know, traveling around, meeting different people, you know, doing these, you know, really odd things. Like the presentation, you know, when we talked that first time that I was on the show, and Serfiel was talking about his upbringing, and I was talking about mine, I specifically talked about these, and I think I did this on one of the private Patreon Zooms. I did a presentation on these figures called musts in India, which are essentially, they're like super powerful yogis that have all of these powers, siddhis. But they're kind of lost. They're like spiritually intoxicated is what they're called. And during World War II, this is actually what Paul Weston talks about too, because there's this interaction with his father who was a World War II soldier and these weird experiences he had in India with some gurus, is that Meher Baba was essentially going around like this, you know, hermit, and all his, you know, sort of some of his group were following with him, and he was making contact with all of these ostensibly crazy homeless people that live in different, you know, cities around India and in Southeast Asia, and would do what appears on the outside to look like ceremonial magic with them. You know, he would go into a cave, they would be in there for 40 days fasting. You know, there are accounts of people, you know, these guys leaving the cave after doing this meditation work and somebody touching them and like having an electric shock blowing them back, like a fuse, you know, hit them. So a lot of the, you know, for anybody that's familiar with, I guess, Eastern occult practices, Tantra, and I don't mean Sting having sex, you know, for 40 hours with Trudy Styler. And I don't mean Sting the wrestler. I mean Sting from
Sting.
Yeah. All of these, you know, so the which is essentially, you know, magic from, you know, the Western and Eastern magic. So it's really pretty interesting, and I think that's the difference there, is that there's this sort of more recent these more recent accounts from all these people, you know, of these pretty interesting stories, things happening.
One of the concepts that I found absolutely fascinating that we talked about in that interview with you was this whole idea that some of these guys are responsible for like profound world-changing events. Was it Sai Baba who was supposedly responsible for World War One? I still right. don't quite understand how.
Yeah,
he was responsible for the direction of it or something. I don't.
So that's, you know, part of the cosmology of this is that, you know, if you get really deep into it, and this is a little bit like, you know, jumping forward to what is it, OT8, and telling you about Xenu. But if anybody gets that reference, it's a Scientology reference there. Well,
appearance. There he is.
Right. There's Xenu. Yeah. and I don't mean this, you know, I am throwing no shade upon this outlook on cosmology, because F if I know, I mean, it could be very well true, is that essentially, you know, these ascended masters are controlling the universe. Like, this is, you know, like deeply, you know, the deepest Jack Kirby stuff. Like, these are ascended masters that are controlling the universe on the subtle planes behind the scenes. We don't understand any of it. And yeah, they appear in our world as essentially, you know, these, like yogis or fakirs or, you know, some other stuff too. Like, I'll reserve a little bit of it for the, you know, the presentation, but, you know, there are these, it goes pretty far out there. I think for anybody that really wants to follow it, fully, like it is a complete and deep cosmology, that goes beyond just this sort of spiritual hierarchy. There's, you know, quite a bit. I could do probably several presentations on all the stuff that I found, which is really interesting because, you know, as a kid, I didn't really think about this, you know, much. It was just, that was what my parents did. There's no dogma involved in it. The best part about it is that I ended up, you know, getting to go to India a couple of times. And, you know, I was smart enough when I went as a, you know, late teenager, that at that point, you know, I was interested in, I mean, I'd been interested in Fortean stuff since I was like a little kid, sitting in the library looking at weird books, in the occult section. But, yeah, so like when I went over there, I was able to interview a few people and get some of their stories and stuff like that. And started making some of these, connections. So it's funny to see because, yeah, most of this, nobody's really found this out yet. But I'd say it's interesting as, you know, the life of Gurdjieff or Inyat Khan or something like that.
And just to point out, we don't want to dog Scientology too much because we're literally going to be right next door to the Church of Scientology in Nashville.
The Nashville Celebrity Center. So sure, personality test is
Walter. Yeah, I'm not. I'm all right. I'm not saying that Xenu isn't behind things. I'm just saying.
Speaking of, this jogged my memory, Mike, about Sting. Wasn't there some kind of weird synchronicities where you were seeing Sting everywhere?
Yeah, it had nothing to do with him and Trudy getting it on either.
Called synchronicity?
Yeah. Well, it was really weird. No, it was just one of those strange kind of pop culture synchronicity things that haunted me for years. I mean, it was, and it was Sting, you know, and to the point where it got so ridiculous. Other people were noticing it. The example I give is I would get in a car with a friend, turn on the radio, and it's Sting. Okay, that's not so crazy. But then we'd go to a grocery store, and we'd walk into the grocery store together, and we'd listen to the music, and it was Sting. And then walking down
So did it count if it was the police?
I would say that it did. If it was music,
Sting,
yeah.
Solo
yeah, you know, Sting is the police. You know, he's like the face of the police. So yeah, but so we'd be in the grocery store, and my friend would go, "Do you catch this, man? You know, it's Sting." And we'd laugh, and then we'd walk around the aisle, and there would be a magazine on the floor, open to a picture of Sting, and that's not an exaggeration. Like, this stuff was making me nuts, and So I really, like, at one point I thought, should I, like, write him or email him somehow, find his agent? But then I think he'd be, who is this freak, you know? But I really had to wonder if he was doing some kind, because he was into weird stuff, if he was, like, broadcasting psychically somehow, and for some reason I was just tapping into the signal or whatever. But, and I was never even a huge Sting fan. Like, I liked the Police enough, but Sting was not, like, you know, a hero of mine or any, you know. But it was inescapably weird for years. It the just original kept happening.
Comes on and on TV.
Yeah, I mean I would, you know, I'd write this stuff down because I had like a synchronicity journal back in the day when, so I would just get hit with these waves of synchronicity. But the Sting themed synchronicities were just overwhelming, like ridiculous. It's absurd. I mean, I feel ridiculous talking about it, but it was something that happened. So similar to the Simpsons. I mean, I had ridiculous over the top synchronicities involving the Simpsons to the point where a lot of times I would sit down to watch the show and I would just be like, okay, what's coming this time? You know, and just mind bogglingly weird, to the point sinks, like, not, oh, I could kind of interpret that maybe. No, these were just like jaw droppers. So whatever, you know, maybe the Simpsons writers and Sting were doing ayahuasca together or something. I don't know. Broadcast this beam or, you know, we could talk about that at the conference.
Sting was performing some tantra somewhere close to Baltimore, right. And it just this concentric rings just broadcasted
somehow. Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, sorry. I mean, that is a weird. That's, you know, that's about as ridiculous as it gets. But it was real. I can't deny that something strange was happening there.
Yeah, I've had those same kind of experiences. Not quite to that extreme, but like once you are hyper aware of something, then you notice it everywhere, and it can be crazy, and it can really mess with your head.
Yeah, but that's the thing, you know, especially with synchronicity. Like I'm the first to say, well, that's just a coincidence or whatever. You know, I try to check myself because I know how easy it is just to be hyper aware, confirmation bias. So for me, if it's going to be a synchronicity, so to speak, it has to be kind of a whopper. You know, it has to have elements to it that aren't easy, just, you know, squishy. It has to be like, holy crap, you know, like that was weird. But yeah, I mean, it's, and I believe kind of, you know, we all have to do that because otherwise you just start, you know, moving down the road to schizophrenia, you know, where everything coordinates with everything, and you know, that's not good. None of us want to go there.
Any weird kind of synchronicities like that for you, Brent? Have you had any kind of strange stuff like that happen?
Usually they're, you know, I've had some, but usually they're good. Nothing with you know, those characters. They usually kind of lead me somewhere, you know, meeting certain people or being at the right place at the right time. Sometimes I'm at the wrong place at the wrong time, but, you know.
Right.
But yeah, there have been a lot of positive synchronicities that I've had. And I know Tim Beckley wrote a book that detailed all kinds of synchronicities that he had during his lifetime. But I don't know that they were all always positive. But the Theosophy thing, it kind of reminded me the early contactee movement. There was supposed to be a lot of influence like that in the background. And I know Hakan Blankovits, in an interview I did for my Keel book, he referred to how he felt there was something that the people of Theosophy were introducing, maybe even actual craft that we called flying saucers back then, and causing some of the people who later became contactees. And I was telling him about a Brazilian general that I was a contactee that I had become acquainted with, his granddaughter. She was telling me about her experiences, and turned out he was also like a psychic medium, and he was also a member of that organization. Mm-hmm. And then I found out from Hakam that there was another one related to him overseas that was, you know, and I thought, man, there's a whole network going on here.
Well, I always think that it's, you know, really strange that people don't mention, and I think some people do mention, the fact that Whitley Strieber has been practicing Gurdjieff Fourth Way since far before his the communion contact, and you know, in particular, has been doing these sensing exercises, which are very, very much it's a type of meditation, if not pranayama of some sort. Yeah,
that's interesting.
Very much so. There's so much we could get into. But I want to real quick tell everybody when Mike and Chris are going to be speaking, and that's going to be Saturday, the 16th of October. Chris, you are 3:10 to 4:10 Central Time, and Mike, you are 4:20 to 5:20.
Uh-oh. You guys don't be looking for that one.
Leave a couple minutes in case people have to step outside the hotel.
What are you going to start your presentation with at 4:20? Brent is going to have
Peruvian whistle.
Have the whistle.
I don't know what the medical marijuana laws are in Nashville.
There are none. We'll get you some CBD.
Okay. All right. I'll have. Okay. Good to know.
And again, Brent, he is 1:40 to 2:40 on Sunday the 17th. So let's
and go. Mine are in natural high, so there won't be any after.
Yes. There will be no contact.
Mine are natural, too.
Contact buzz. Let's start
psychoacoustical.
Mike, let's start. Everybody, tell where you, your websites, books, any of that stuff that you guys want to plug. Mike, let's start with you.
Okay, sure. Yeah, you can find all my stuff at MichaelHughes.com. Wow, it looks like my camera suddenly got blurry here, or maybe it's just my eyes. So it's MichaelMHughes.com, and any social media, it's just Michael M. Hughes. So like Twitter, Facebook, all that sort of stuff. My book, this is my latest book, Magic for the Resistance, Rituals and Spells for Change, that came out 2018. And but I also write like kind of Fortean-themed supernatural thrillers and stuff like that. I have a trilogy called the Blackwater Lights Trilogy. And if you like all this weird, spooky stuff, you might like that as well. So,
awesome,
excellent, Mr. Rains.
Well, I'm prepared too. Here's my first book from 2004, Visitors from Hidden Realms. It's got a lot of material on UFOs and ancient mysteries and shamanism, and the Peruvian whistle and vessels are also mentioned in there. 2004, my On the Edge of Reality, which Tim Beckley actually published, which is really a series of interviews that I've previously published in my magazine. And, of course, my John Keel book in 2009, awesome. Telling how I got interested in all this high strangeness and Keel's influence on myself and others. I interview people who knew Keel. And, of course, I edit Alternate Perceptions Online magazine, which at one time, we were actually a print publication until the internet came in and took over things. So we migrated to the internet. But anyway, it's apmagazine.info is the link. And, you know, it's always, we always welcome people to come in and browse around. And we have a monthly issue that comes out on the first of each month and archived previous articles there, too, and interview features, columns, regular book reviews and letters to the editor and various articles.
Yeah, you should check it out. Brent's got some great interviews on there that he does. I mean, basically, it's almost like a podcast in and of itself. So, and Mr. Ernst.
Yeah, well, I usually don't do books or anything like that or speak like this. I usually make movies, and you can find those at brightrectangle.com, which, you know, feature things like Adam Go Rightly. So they're in the wheelhouse of, I think, most people that are watching this. And then you can also sometimes find me and co-hosting Where Did the Road Go when I have time.
Yes. And I will be appearing on Where Did the Road Go soon. We did a recording last week, so just guys watch out for that as well.
Could you repeat the website, the rectangle website?
Yeah, it's a Bright Rectangle.
Bright Rectangle. Okay, gotcha.
BHT Rectangle. Yeah, BrightRectangle.com. Okay. Yeah, and that'll take cool. you if you want to stream any of the films. I think they're still on Amazon and such. Yes, absolutely.
Excellent. Highly recommended.
Yeah, highly recommended.
And we're Baltimoreans, is that correct, Chris?
I'm more recent than you. We came down here for a faculty job. About 6 years ago. So I'm not super new, but it's still for me feels new. Yeah.
Well, I can't believe I haven't run into you yet, but we'll have to fix that.
Absolutely, we'll do that. Absolutely. Right.
All right, gentlemen, I want to thank you for being a part of this. We are going to be back. We'll for the podcast audience, we will come back and close out the show. But we're going to close this section out. Remember, guys, StrangeRealitiesConference.com. You can come to Nashville and see all these guys live, or you can also, for $70, or you can stream for $30. So we highly recommend whichever way you guys are going to get this information. These are going to be some powerhouse presentations from these three gentlemen. I'm really looking forward to it. All right, October 15th through 17th, StrangeRealitiesConference.com. Get your tickets. Bye.
Goodbye.
All right, guys. Welcome back to the show. We're going to just like briefly close this out, give you guys the usual spiel on what is going on and what we're doing. That was a great couple of sessions with first Kiki Dombrowski, Amy Petula, and Heather Mosier. And then, of course, Chris Ernst, Michael Hughes, and Brent Wright. So we were glad to have them. And all six of them are going to be presenting either from home or in Nashville for the Strange Realities Conference 2021. Tickets are still available. We do have some room left for $70 tickets in person. And if you are in Nashville, but keep in mind that we are checking the vaccination, or we also would take a test within 72 hours. So
a negative one.
A negative one. Yeah. Yeah. Just to be specific. So we are getting pretty close to the day. How you feel about it?
I feel really good. We got a little bit of details to iron out, but besides that, the venue is pretty much ready to go. We are working on the streaming component, and that seems like it's pretty well organized and ready to go now. Also, of course, we've got arrangements for guests and transportation. For the speakers. And I'm feeling pretty confident about it. I just hope that as many people as possible can join us, because, guys, you don't want to miss this.
Yeah, this is going to be a powerhouse of many different kinds of presentations. And you guys are not going to get what it's like at your typical, I think, paranormal conference.
We were just kind of talking about that, how we're providing freedom to these speakers to be able to really talk about and explore things that they're passionate about and may not get to talk about in other forums. This is to a highly educated audience, very familiar with the topics, so just like on the show, we can let them take a real deep dive, and I think you guys are going to really appreciate that.
All right, well, without further ado, I think we'll close out. Guys, we still do have Patreon. If you guys are wanted to come join us on Patreon, Surfiel can tell you how to sign up on there.
You can check all the different options and orders we offer membership for on there on patreon.com/conspiranormal. We're going to be having our last Mystic crew meeting before the holidays and the conference here coming up. That should be like a preview that will already have taken place by the time this comes out. So hopefully that was a blast. And you guys got a preview of what's going on for the $10 and up patrons. For $5 and up, you get a special episode every week, exclusive that no one else gets. And at the $20 level, you get an exclusive t-shirt and a secret experience at the Strange Realities Conference.
Yeah, you might get to meet an ascended master at the Strange Realities Conference. You never know what might happen. All right, guys, that's it. We will conclude by saying strangerealitiesconference.com, October 15th through 17th in Nashville, Tennessee, and online. Tickets for online are $30. Get them while they're still hot. All right, take care. We'll be back with more speakers next week on
Conspiranormal.
Consider becoming a Patreon at www.patreon.com/conspiranormal or leave a one-time donation at conspiranormal.com. And please check out our YouTube channel, Conspiranormal Podcast.